Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and creator of the groundbreaking concepts of intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership. These concepts focus on the integration of creative thinking and cultural development while preparing your leaders for the future of work. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of curiosity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. And it's all based on brain science. We have exciting guests on this show in various fields such as neuroscience, education, the arts, and business who highlight how creative thinking thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation, especially when you have an arts-infused foundation. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast, where we look at intercultural creativity, prismatic leadership, and the new tools that are needed for leaders of today and tomorrow. I'm excited to be with you. This is your host, Janine Ledford, your keynote speaker, your corporate trainer, and author on all things creativity and all things intercultural development. So we are so excited to be here. We have with us an amazing guest. You know, I bring to you the best. We have Kristen Isaac, MPH. She is the founder and the CEO of Project Solve and has over 10 years of experience in project and program management. She has a background in business operations and process development and improvement, and she's led numerous projects from conception to completion. Kristen is an analytical and conceptual thinker who effectively partners with stakeholders to accomplish major and creative goals. She has used these skills to grow employee resource groups, impact institutional policy changes, facilitate leadership development along with myself, and has developed programming to support workforce development and diversification. Finding innovative and creative and efficient ways to develop leaders in impactful ways is a passion of hers. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Janine. I'm excited to be here.
So it's amazing that, you know, I met you on a training day. Someone brought together some top thought leaders in the Wilmington area, and you were among the guest list. And little did I know that I would be just drawn to your expertise, your thought leadership, your heart, and your compassion, right? And we have been working together on some cafe projects, looking at intercultural creativity, but you've been doing some great work on your own. If you could tell our audience a little bit more about who you are and how you got to be where you are today.
So I have more recently gotten a chance to flex my creative muscle, especially since meeting Janine at that dinner that she mentioned. So it's been a really exciting experience, really building up that muscle that a lot of times is a bit stifled in outside of entrepreneurship sometimes. And so I've actually been able to use a lot of innovative thought processes in developing programs and things like that since I've worked in nonprofits. And nonprofits are historically under-resourced. And so when you're working in nonprofits, you learn how to use your resources very wisely, which a lot of times means getting very creative with how you can provide services to the community. So that's a lot of where my foundation comes from and how I've learned to be creative and innovative over a decade now is really where I started my career. And that's, you know, service to the community and nonprofits.
Service to the community. You know, a lot of our work is about the community. How do we build up, you know, the people that we live with? And let's start with our relationship. You know, you came in and taught with me a few times and looked at how to really use, you know, this interactive aspect and metaphorical thinking and just really making the curriculum come alive. What was some of the surprises that you saw as far as new ways to teach and develop people in this creative fashion?
I loved seeing how you brought in some of what you learned in the classroom into, you know, these leadership trainings. I've done plenty of leadership trainings, and you're always used to or ready for it to be very silent and people not to be very engaged. And when you come into a cafe strategies training, especially on intercultural creativity and, you know, coming up prismatic leadership, is that people get engaged. You know, we had someone singing in one of our trainings. We get a little bit of a dance when we play some music. Like the movement that comes when you're in a training is just so special to see people kind of dropping off some of those worries of who's watching me, what are people thinking, and then just fully trusting the process and getting engaged.
And engagement is huge, right? The brain, which, you know, I travel with my brain. The brain needs engagement. I have a toy brain for those of you who are listening. The brain needs engagement to learn, right? The brain needs engagement to really file away, even though we're learning new things about how memories work, but I'll just use a term, file away the learning process and how to transfer it over to implementation into their life. And so thank you for really pinpointing that. So when you think about Project Solved, you know, like when you go into a company and it's all about the future of work, right? Companies that need to pivot, companies that need to be agile in their belief systems, but also their business strategy. What are some initial things that you look for when you're working with a company right off the bat?
I'm looking for who's at the table, what voices have historically been listened to. I also want to know what you've tried before, and is this, what types of personalities are here? And is it the personality of we've always done it this way, so this is how we're going to do it? Or is it the just get it done, I don't really care what happens? There's significant personalities that are going to making, you know, implementing change in different organizations. And those are the stakeholders you have to get buy-in from. So I really want to know who's at the table. What are the ideals or what's the culture that's already been built within the organization? And are we actually ready for change? Because there's different stages of readiness for change and especially behavior change. And I've learned that previously. So it's something that sits in the back of my head is like, are we just contemplating change? Or are we in the pre-contemplation stage? Or are we actually ready to dive in and get things done? And I'm the type to ask for forgiveness, not necessarily always permission. And so I'm also looking for environments that are just kind of tired of doing it the same way they've always have done it and are ready for new blood and new ideas and creativity to be infused into their day-to-day.
In my book, The Seven Gems of Intercultural Creativity, that's one of the quotes that I pulled out where someone said, the most dangerous thing you can say is, well, we've always done it this way, right? And I wonder how many times that you've heard that. And language is powerful, right? So who's saying that? Well, we've always done it this way. It's always worked, right? And what does that look like? And so, but when we talk about, you know, a lot of our work and a lot of our research and curriculum is based off of neuroscience. And the neuroscience shows us that the brain loves routine. The brain loves to predict, right? The brain loves to predict what's going to happen. That's why I don't want change, because usually change leads me into the unknown. And you talked about behavior change, right? In my keynote, I have research where we looked at, I think, 243 companies, and the culture that was the most agile really did the best from the bottom line, but also to the cultural health, you know. But it wasn't just strategic change, it was beliefs change, mindset change. How do you build a belief system of agility? Do you have any tips along those lines of what are some of the initial steps that you do to assist people with their structural beliefs that they've been building up for 3-4 decades?
I think one of the things that I've most come into contact with, and I always say worker bees, and I mean that in the most respectful term, because I was a worker bee, which is how I understand how this works, is, you know, make sure people actually believe that you care about what their voice is and what they're saying. I think in order to really make sustainable change, you really have to make sure everyone's voice is heard. And you have to do it in different ways, right? So there are a lot of people who may not speak up. So there has to be different methods of actually going in and finding out what people need. So for me, I'll go in and I will shadow. And I don't speak, I shadow. And I just watch and learn about how things are going. Note down the stop gaps, note down the spaces where, wow, this is really not going to work long term, or it clearly isn't currently working and is causing a lot of frustration. I review that with each team member separately if time allows. If not, it's a group review of what I've noticed and seen. And then I want them to give feedback on the process, right? So the only way you're really going to implement sustainable change is if you have buy-in from the people who are actually doing the day-to-day change or the day-to-day process or workflows. And so it's really just giving people the power to share their voices and providing psychological safety in order for them to be able to do that. And that's not always easy. We throw around the term psychological safety a lot, but we need to have the conversation. And I know Janine has gone over this or has done the research on this, but you know, we really have to understand what psychological safety means and what it means for different people and the different cultures that are in the room, you know, the different upbringings that people have had don't always put them in a space where they feel as comfortable speaking, you know, to, you know, leadership in a certain way or sharing their voice. So that's kind of my high level process of how I implement change.
That's good. And can you define what psychological safety means to you going into an organization where you haven't really determined what culture you're dealing with, but what does psychological safety mean to you?
So as I'm going into new organizations, what it meant to me prior to when I was working at a different organization was being able to share my voice, having an opportunity to kind of be authentically myself. And when I truly remember the moments where I really was able to use my voice and be authentically me, then that is where I felt most safe. And so what I've done with my business now is I've kind of set that precedent in the beginning is like, look, I like transparency. I like to really be able to, I want us to be able to talk about things. The only way we're going to make this work is if we can create an environment where you feel safe talking to me about what you need. And then I can feel safe consulting and giving you some tools and feedback on things. So psychological safety to me means being able to have transparent conversations where, you know, we all have good intentions and we just really want to, we're all focused on our North Star, what the mission is or what the culture we're looking to build in the organization.
The power of voice, you know, you mentioned voice and being authentically. So those are two topics that we can go. And I share in my book and now a lot of the teachings, how some of your best ideas are in the basement. Right? Some of your best ideas are on the manufacturing floor, right? They don't have a seat at the table. They barely have a seat at the cafeteria lunch, you know, just, and they may not be seen or they may feel. So I have this case study with this business in the 80s where the CEO changed and really like he gave out his phone number to everybody. And he said, employee safety is now number one. And that spoke to a lot of people at every level, especially on the onboarding level or the floor level, right? And then the story goes how one of the men, they gave an idea that ended up revolutionizing the whole industry. But he said, I was carrying this idea with me for years, but I never felt that I had the voice. I never felt that I could share it with leadership until this new CEO came on board. And then, of course, I share the story about the Ford Motor System and how Ford really got their cars out and running at an amazing speed because of the assembly line, which came from an idea from a mechanic who went out of his industry to go just curiously look at something else that someone else was doing. And so what can you talk about to your senior leadership about being more aware of these voices, these ideas that are on lower levels of the organization? What things can they actually do to get these voices to the table?
So I wrote that down. I want to talk about being aware, and you made me think of something else, is be genuine with how you want to connect with your people, right? With having the CEO give out his phone number, that was genuine. That was on his heart to go ahead and do that, to make sure that his team felt that they had a direct line to the top, right? So I think that shows to his awareness. You have to be, as a leader, you have to be aware of your presence and how your title maybe pushes you in a place where you feel out of reach from, yeah, you know, even the people who are directly working with you or under you. And so I think you just have to create forums where people can share their voice. I think that each leader should probably take time to think about the times when they were a worker bee and how to make sure that they reach back. I think Sankofa is like, you don't close the door behind you. You kind of reach back and make sure people are coming along the journey with you. And so if you're about to implement large scale change and you have not talked to your worker bees, that's concerning. That's something that you should really take time to think about and make sure that you at least have some key players at the table. But the simplest way to do it is go on a go-see. Go see how things are running day to day. Just be a fly on the wall. Think of Undercover Boss, that show, how they go in and they just kind of go in and see how things are running. Have fun with it. Go in, tell them to teach you how this workflow works. If you're going to a factory, tell them how to, you know, learn how to work all of this. The best leaders I've ever known are the ones who know how to do every single job that of the team they have under them. And if you've gotten into a position where you're not able to do that, just go see them. They will thank you for it. Just taking the time, we've talked about this, time affluence, right? Is taking the time to make sure that people feel seen and heard. And that is going to, you know, retain the best of your employees and make people really want to help grow the organization.
Yes, you did a great job when you were co-teaching of sharing a story of a CEO that made that connection. And so teaching the neurological aspect of that, like what's actually happening in our brains and the synchronization of our brains of people, our leaders who actually work on synchronizing their brains with their team members and having group synchronization as well. And what that looks like. Can you share that story of your CEO?
So this leader worked at a very, very large hospital system, the largest in the state. And he would walk around the hallways and he would stop and talk to people. When I tell you, if he knew you, he was stopping to talk to you. And if he didn't know you, he had the biggest smile on his face. At the time when I first saw him doing this, I was new to that organization and I had no idea who he was, but I always remembered that smile and how he would stop and say hello to my fellow team members. So I'd stop and ask, I'd say, you know, who is that? And so he made the time to mentor people, to continue to check in, and just to stop and smile. I know it might sound a little bit corny, but just stop and smile and just walk around the halls and just make leaders, senior leaders, not such like this far off land, that fantasy land that no one is able to, you know, engage with. So he was just super engaging. And I always use him as one of my favorite leaders. I tell him that to this day, as he changed my viewpoint of what a leader could be.
Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful. I keynoted the Women in Medicine event, and one of the speakers was talking about, you know, we have this phrase, you know, be unstoppable. Yeah, in which we think of, hey, you know, go for your goals. Don't let struggle or mishap stop you. Go for your goals. But she was like, I want to switch that word on you. I want you to be stoppable. Meaning I want you to have a demeanor and a facial expression that allows people to know that, hey, if you need to stop me and connect with me or let me know something, I'm here. I'm stoppable. Because, you know, I learned this from Seinfeld. I think George Costanza, he was like, if you don't want people to mess with you, you always look like you're a Russian wear. Just go, 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 right? And I used to try that. Just if I didn't want anyone to stop me, I would just be like, oh my goodness, I have to get somewhere. I had nowhere to be, but I was acting rushing. My face was rushing. So people don't stop you if you're in that external demeanor, right? But I was just playing around just to see if it worked. But that really spoke to me. Janine, are you stoppable? Meaning, do you feel like and look like people can approach you? Basically, are you approachable? And I love the point where you said, it sometimes feels that senior leaderships have their own island in faraway land, right? Like they're untouchable. And the best corporations, no matter how big, right? Even though I know it's a little bit harder for our larger ones, but some of the best corporations I hear time and time again are the senior leaderships are stoppable, meaning they're approachable and they're relatable.
Yeah. And another thing, you know, it doesn't even have to be, you know, some of these companies are very large, like you said, so you're not able to be at every site, but have you scheduled monthly time to do some sort of Q&A with your teams and say, hey, you know, I'm here, come in, have lunch with me, have virtual lunch or something like that. you just want to add that human aspect back into leadership. And I don't think that it just makes me think of that, what you just said is, you know, are you stoppable? You know, are you putting that human aspect back into leadership where people feel as though they can stop you, that you aren't so high up that people feel as though they shouldn't be allowed to talk to you? Because a lot of that culture has been built up through generations is the hierarchy, right? And so the hierarchy is something that people still bring into workplaces to this day of, you know, I can't talk to that person. They're higher than me. Well, you know, let's break down some of those silos. Let's break down some of those hierarchies because, you know, coming from healthcare, they definitely exist. And it can be that non-clinical versus clinical side of things is challenging to get past those barriers. But if we broke down those barriers, can I tell you how many partnerships we could build, how much more innovative we could be, how much more creative we could get if we work together?
Yeah, that's huge. So, you know, you have your own business project solved, but you and I also do partner as well. You're one of my top, or our, not my, but our top facilitators. And, you know, one of the courses that we teach is we're calling it power, position, and purpose, understanding power dynamics while building inclusive teams. And we talk about how prismatic leadership is complex, like true prismatic leaders who know how to bring out the colors and the gifts of people's talents. It's complex. It's not, you know, for some people, it comes just with who they are, but some people, it's a journey, right? It's a developmental journey. And so we know that brain research shows that authoritative power can inhibit leaders from seeing the plight of others. The work of Dr. Matthew Platt talks about what the brain actually does when it's considering hierarchy while developing relationships, right? And you alluded to that as well. And our description says, you know, this power can lower leaders' ability for connection, creativity, and cultural awareness. I want to touch on that because we've learned that what you just said, the higher you go in hierarchy, we have now seen from brain research, the less creative you can be and the less your social brain network can actually get smaller because you're higher. You know, when you're lower on the levels on the organizational chart, you need to be aware of like a lot of things, like who has power, who's coming in the room, or okay, well, you know, what's going on. But when you're higher, you just need to be aware of you, you know, you and your direct team or who's directly underneath you. You know, most people don't really know or don't wish to know like what's going on, like way in that corner. And of course it's easier said than done, but I have a lot of case study research about the CEO of this hotel chain. And he actually factored in an hour every Thursday to sit with the housekeeping staff.
That's how you do it.
And have donuts. So first it was just a social thing. It freaked them out at first. Like, what is he doing here? But then, you know, within a month, they're like, hey, you know, and it was a beautiful thing because what he reported was number one, that became his most favorite hour of like the work week, right? And number two, he saw things that he wouldn't normally see because he had a relationship with them who see things that he wouldn't normally see. So before an issue became a huge problem, he had five steps ahead of it because of his relationship with people from different levels. Any thoughts about that?
It makes me think, just to keep it simple, is like proximate leadership is risk mitigation in itself, right? So,
ooh, that's a quote.
So being proximate to your people, to the challenges, to the fun, to the good and the bad is how you're going to build thriving cultures and thriving organizations, right? And you talked about the farther you get up to the top, how smaller your circle gets. And there's that, you know, that saying that's it's lonely at the top. But if we think about it, it doesn't have to be. You know, it doesn't always have to be that way, right? And the leaders that challenge what's always been are the ones who are going to continue to build up the next generation of leadership even better than we have it now, right? And it just really opens up the lines of communication, which is super, super important in order to make sure that, again, you know, a lot of organizations are serving some form of customer or clientele, right? If your people are happy within because of the culture you've developed, the environment you've built, just think about how that is going to impact how they serve your clients, the community, everyone. And there's so much studies and so much research out there that talks about happy within, everybody else experiences that and feels that, right?
Oh, I'm getting two different things. Number one, the human aspect of that, right? Happy within. I just did a keynote at Women in Electronics, and I shared that quote from the African proverb where it said, if you can, you know, deal with the enemy or the issue within, the enemy without can do no harm, right? And then, so from a human aspect, that quote's powerful, happy within, happy with without, like you have a better foundation to deal with external influences and threats. But on an organizational aspect, I never really thought about the ripple effect to that. If your organization is happy within, people are well grounded, they're healthy mentally, emotionally, and socially healthy. There's one for you, right? And creatively, they feel that there's room for growth. If all of those aspects are happy within, it just turns around and pulsates, right? That energy without to your clients and your customers.
And we've all been to those businesses, you know, no businesses are perfect, but we've all been to those businesses where you can tell people are either love to be there or they are absolutely miserable, right? And that's something that we need to look at. You know, we need to pay attention to that because customer experiences is huge. Word of mouth can make or break businesses and organizations, right? And so it's super important to pay attention to how your staff feels. It's about, you know, we talk about self-care, but it's all organizational care, right? It's that self-care within your organization that you need to pay attention to.
Girl, I need to go back and listen to this episode myself. Because, you know, we have our leadership training. So this is good. And I love that quote, approximate leadership. I have to write that in my book and credit you. The great Kristen Isaac. That's profound. And it's so important for people as we continue to head into this future of work. AI and machine learning is doing its thing, right? I just saw a thing about this person who did this Scooby-Doo like mini series, and he used a few voices from the original Scooby-Doo, and he used AI because, of course, he's like 23 young film student with no cash. And the woman from the young teenage character from Scooby-Doo, she got all upset, and, you know, just because that's a real threat to a lot of people. So as we're in this huge transition, you know, technology-wise, but also leadership-wise, leadership training-wise, what does it look like to really tool up our leaders for this next future of work? And the next topic I want to get to before we wrap up is, you know, your concept of emotional contagion, you know, and just how that works. It's still connected to what we were just talking about, how the emotions really connect. How do you talk to your clients and your people about emotional contagion and how to handle that? And what is it?
So for me, I try to break that down even simpler because I think people can understand the term empathy. Right. So I like to lead with empathy. And, you know, as an empath, you know, I can feel all the great feelings in the room and I can feel all the, you know, bad feelings in the room. So as I am working with different groups, I think it's super important to talk about empathy and actually recognizing that it's okay to have emotions in the workplace. That has also been a generational thing that we have kind of just said that when you walk in those doors, you are not to feel anything. You are to come in, get your job done and leave. And that was such a disservice that we didn't know at the time whenever that launched decades and decades ago prior to me starting in the workforce. But, you know, there'd be times that I'd get emotional in a meeting or a call for good reason. And it was like shunned upon. So I think that we have to start to be more comfortable with bringing emotion back into the workplace, then we can start having conversations about empathy and emotional contagion and how all of that actually builds more of a thriving team, right? So if you can be empathetic towards what others are experiencing or, you know, what they could experience in different situations, that's going to like flip your team environment on its head. And as you're developing leaders, you mentioned something I wanted to touch on it. Let's not just develop the leaders who are in those middle manager and higher up places. Let's make sure that we are putting leadership development opportunities for our worker bees, right? Because there are, you know, untitled leaders leading every day, right? And so you just make sure that you're giving them the supports needed in order to truly lead and build the culture that you're looking to build in your organization.
I'm almost wishing this was like live. This has been great. There are untitled leaders leading every day. You are spitting out the gems like it is. We are at Tiffany's. Okay. That is great, which Tiffany's will be a client of mine. I'm just putting that out there. That is amazing. There are untitled leaders leading every day. And I always say everyone in here is the leader because you are at least the CEO of you, right?
Yes.
But that's really what I call into prismatic leadership. And here's why. As you know, I have my background in elementary ed. So I spent 15 years with people in their formative years, right? Five-year-olds all the way to 10-year-olds, and then a nonprofit to 18. And then I taught at the collegiate level. But my young ones, I would never look at a five-year-old and say, okay, you're there. And when I see you in 5 years, you know, you're there. I'm going to be very alarmed if there is no growth from 5 years old to 10. You know, a lot of infants, they have their milestone points, right? Because and it's a red flag if a child doesn't reach a milestone. It shows us that the developmental process is not occurring the way that it should. Now, that's normal for a three-year-old, a five-year-old, someone in that heightened developmental range of life. But when you and I have a 30-year-old or a 35-year-old coming to us, right? And they come to us, they onboard, they get their job description, whatever. If I come back 5 years from now and there is no growth whatsoever, why isn't that a red flag? Like, it would be a red flag with the five-year-old, right? If the five-year-old is 10 and there's been no growth, that's a huge issue. But no one's saying that if it's a 30-year-old to a 35-year-old. What are your thoughts about that?
That is probably, I'm a visual person. I can visualize that very clearly and I can understand that very clearly. You're right. You would not have advanced to the next grade if you were not developing properly, right? Mm-hmm. Even as a baby, as there's the different checkups, you know, along the, you know, as in, from a newborn 6 months and things like that, there are developmental milestones that are put in place in order to make sure that, again, you're developing properly. At what point did we decide that we don't need to develop people anymore? And at what point did we decide that there were other things more important than developing our talent within, right? Because if you don't build it from within, they are going to go outside to figure that out, to find that. And so I think there's not a lot of importance in, you know, maybe not a lot of resources put into the learning development aspect of all of your workforce, not just the people leaders. And so that would be my call to action for leaders is, you know, how are you developing everyone? Have you had those conversations where you ask them, where do they want to be in a year, 3 years, 5 years? And then make sure that you have clear paths of growth within your organization. And also, this is the key part, so I hope everyone's listening. If you do not have opportunities within your organization, help them thrive in finding other opportunities, right? Because that is going to speak volumes. That is a true leader. If you can speak up and say, I don't have what you need here, but I do have connections somewhere else. You know, a lot of people try to keep and stifle their really passionate leaders. And that's, you know, we've got to develop our people. Have to spend the resources on doing it. That's time, money, and everything else on making sure that development of people is one of your top priorities, strategic priority number one, if not two.
Yes, that is very good. And once again, that's speaking to what we're talking about as far as prismatic leadership is, once again, the elementary school teacher able to look at the five-year-old and see the greatness because they know that five-year-olds are supposed to be developing, right? And that there's a journey. And good prismatic leaders, and I know you've had some in your career, and I know I've had mine, they saw things in me that I didn't even see in myself.
Right.
That's key. They saw things in me that I didn't even know what was there. You know, I remember one principal that I had, he was like, you know, I see you teaching at the collegiate level. And I'm like, I am 3 weeks into teaching third grade. Just let me get through this, you know, let me get it this year. But I'm like, I had no vision of me ever teaching at the collegiate level. And then there I was, you know, 2014 or whatever, teaching, not even undergrad, I'm teaching master students, right? Who were getting their master's. And you need people, right? You need people in your life to call out the greatness in you. That's the prismatic power.
Yeah. And just think about how far people can go and grow if you give them the right nutrients, right? Mm-hmm. And make sure they have, you know, everything they need to be supported. Like the best leaders I've had are super supportive. And I can tell you, some of them weren't even my direct leaders. They're people who met me and saw something in me, who did the same thing to me, Jenny. You know, leaders who impart a little bit of fear in you because they want you to stretch and grow, those are also the ones you want to have in your circle. Growth can be a little bit scary, but why not challenge yourself?
Yeah, it can be. It is. It is. It's either scary or exhilarating. One or the other, right?
Yes.
No, there's no in between. And in education, we call that the zone of proximal development. So, you know, for your work or whatever curriculum you're working on, it's either, oh, I've done this a million times, I can do this with my eyes closed, or it's way too hard. Like, I am trying to learn how to multiply and you're giving me trigonometry, like those steps of development have been missing. So that's out of their zone, right? Too easy or way too hard. You want to put people in their zone of proximal development where they can't do it so easy, but they don't know everything. They have to pivot and figure things out and pull in resources and be creative and self-teach, that concept of self-learning. Ah, so good, so good. So what are some other expertise areas or thought leadership areas that you feel you are positioned to give some great strategies and tips in?
One of my favorite past roles that I did was developing employee resource groups, which is a major, major, major tool to help foster a culture of belonging within your organizations. I loved, loved, loved working on with the ERGs. I had 10 of them, ranging from Pride to our Latino and Hispanic community to our African American leaders, and they were all volunteers. So a lot of ERG leaders are volunteer leaders, right? And they do this because they're passionate about the work. They've noticed something within your organization and they want to help be the change that they want to see within the org. And so employee resource groups would probably, if you're, you know, you can start off small, but any organization with at least 50 people probably should really consider what an employee resource group development, you know, program development looks like. And probably my other thing of expertise is that I've been noticing and having a lot of conversations about lately is we all talk about strategic planning, but we do not focus on the actual implementation of those strategic plans. And when I was working in diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, I was one of the key people helping to implement the strategic plan. You've got your ideas, the goals, and sometimes those things just sit on a shelf. So now you have to figure out how to actually put these plans in place and implement them and make progress towards those goals. And that is my favorite thing to do. I tell visionaries, I will take your vision and make it a reality. And I love it. It is my element. I get to be creative, innovative, and use resources wisely to make things happen. Sometimes things that have been just a thought for years, you know. And so those are two of my big things is, you know, strategy is great, but implementation is awesome. And then also some sort of culture developing program and employee resource groups. There's so much information out there about them. And I loved it.
Yes, that is amazing. So all those who are listening, if you know you have done nothing in these areas, your employee resource group areas, you've been thinking about it, you may have heard about it on a podcast here and there, or in a random HBR article, but you need someone to help you consult on this,
reach out. Kristen is your person. And of course, if you need implementation of your amazing strategy or even clear refocus on what that strategy is to begin with, right? You help with that. And I know you've been a beautiful, beautiful just contributor and thought leader with Cafe Strategies and everything, and watching us grow and growing with us as well. And just one aspect before we leave, I just want to talk once again about the brain. I'm holding up this toy brain that I love and carry with me. I should give it a name, Diana or something, right? I think someone named the brain. But we now know, you know, pulling from the work of Dr. Matthew Lieberman, he has a wonderful talks at Google about the social brain at work. And then Your Brain at Work by Dr. David Rock. And then, of course, I always quote Dr. Michael Platt and Dr. Lisa Nicole Barrett, but they're really getting into how social our brains are. We cannot ignore how emotional, right? Emotions first, and then the logic follows, right? And so understanding emotion, that self-awareness aspect, that's huge for leadership. There's a wonderful book I talk about called Leading in a Nonlinear World. And like the first half of that whole book is all about the inner game. It's all about metacognition, self-awareness, interoception, right? A term I learned from Dr. Lisa Gilman Barrett, how leaders need to gear up in these skills. But going back to what you were talking about, the importance of ERG groups, right? Or ERGs, right? Because the G is group, right? Going back to just the resource groups, that really gives people the social connection their brains need to synchronize, correct?
Yes. You actually get to build relationships with people outside of your department. You get to find your squad, right? And people working towards the same goal with the same passions. And that changes the work environment for people. That one thing, finding belonging within your organization, changes the game for a lot of people, right? And creates a safe space. A lot of ERGs provide a safe space to have those courageous conversations. And by courageous conversations, I mean, you know, I'm in a space that, you know, that I have, you know, not so great leader, you know, how can I help? Mentorship within the organization is invaluable. And with your peers, you know, it's great to be able to talk with your peers and, you know, kind of come together on things that you're all experiencing.
Yeah, see, that's good. I'm so glad. Once again, I think I really do need to listen to this episode myself. That's what I'm pulling for research for my next book called Your Brain, Your Bias, and the Beauty of Your Creative Mind. Is we talk about intercultural development, right? And that's a key thing. But we also talk about creative thinking, and a big part of creative thinking, I just did a live on this just now. You might want to go check it out. But how the brain needs different cognitive data points. And the further they are, you know, the more creative ideas can be. So employee resource groups could be based on similarity. I know you have like ethnic groups and just different demographics that are similar. But you just mentioned that some of these allow across departments, right? Across the departments, cross levels, possibly.
Yeah.
And so it's that adds to the creativity. So yeah, we may all be, you know, women, or we may all be Black, or just whatever demographic is the title of that ERG. But you know, you're a senior lead, and I just got onboarded last week, or you know, you've been doing that, and I'm over here operations with, you know, accountants, with the marketing department. That in itself is a huge creative move, because the brain needs to be exposed to other areas of the organization and outside the organization. That's a whole other conversation as well, right?
ERGs are like your one-stop shop for all of that, right? So I used to have the ERGs partner, and they wanted to partner. So you have, you know, the women's ERG, you know, going out with the veterans ERG to put out flags for Memorial Day at the cemetery. Mm-hmm. You have them doing both the internal work and external facing work that allows you to get engaged with the community, which is just warms your heart in a different way, right? So you want them to partner together. That is the best employee resource group program too, is that you make sure that they are partnering as groups, because you want them to also not work in silos. If you have them working in silos, it kind of defeats the purpose of the employee resource group program. So yeah, they're just they're like a one-stop shop for how you really can implement some strategic change and innovation within your organization.
Wow. It should be almost mandatory, at least to offer it or to get the ball rolling and to see how you can create healthy. Because it will impact your bottom line, because it impacts anything that impacts the brain and the brain's ability to synchronize and be healthy and have healthy relationships in that great inner game, right? Will impact the outer game, which impacts the bottom line. So there you have it. Brilliant you are. Thank you so much, Kristen Isaac, the founder and CEO of Project Solved, one of our top cafe facilitators and speakers as well. She is on the rise. I mean, you excited for your book coming out? I'm going to throw that out there. And maybe an inner child's book as well. We don't know. But we're excited to see how you are going to grow and be interculturally creative and becoming into your own charismatic leadership as you continue to develop these. Of course, we are the gems, right? The diamond is our logo. We ask all of our guests to leave our audience with a gem. You really just want them to get this one last point. What would it be?
Be the leader that you've always wished you had. I'll just leave it there. There's a lot that you can come with that, but be the leader you always wish you'd had.
That's good. Well, thank you so much. If people wanted to look you up to help them develop their ERGs or to get their strategic implementation down, or just to really consult with you with all the other amazing things you do, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. It's Kristen Isaac, MPH. And then also you can go to projectsolve.org and you can reach me there. But LinkedIn is probably the best way to reach out to me.
Awesome. I am on LinkedIn as well. Love LinkedIn. And thank you so much. Please, audience, don't forget that you are a diamond. We do have our books out, 7 Gems of Intercultural Creativity, How to Create, Connect, and Innovate Across Cultural Lines. We have our Inner Child's book. They're not children's books because they're for adults as well, called My Brain, My Brain, My Beautiful Brain, and I Am Creative. We are headed to Portland, Oregon to do a news clip for Sean. So please send your best wishes, because putting a 5-year-old on the news is always risky business. And what else? We are just, having our Prismatic Leadership training programs. If you need amazing facilitators and speakers, we just did DigiKey up in Minnesota. We trained 200 leaders. Kristen, myself, and our team trained, over 500 leaders at Boston Medical Center. Yep. That was amazing. Talk about building trust, right, within inclusive teams. And we've done stuff with John Paul Mitchell Systems and, my goodness, so many Gilead Sciences. We did their leadership training as well. And so we are really into getting leaders ready for this future of work on the inside and the outside, right? In prismatic leadership. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you on the next Create and Grow podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to learn the various ways you are creative and how we can be more creative when we work together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com. This is where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to develop leaders with the unique prismatic leadership method. We also have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our inner child books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones and you too. Our team thanks you once again for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. And remember to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.